Welcome to the Exoverland Podcast. At Exoverland, we're committed to living a life of adventure and to sharing what we learn in the hopes of inspiring and empowering others to boldly explore the world. Join the conversation as we sit down to share stories of overland travel and vehicle-based adventure with a broad range of compelling guests from around the globe.
Welcome, guys, onto the podcast. Eli, Croft, we're all Croft boys here.
Yeah.
Eli, Ryder, and Cyrus. For our audience, everyone watching, this is a first to have all three boys on the podcast together. Cyrus has been on, I think, two different times, at least once.
I think twice, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I think you were on the podcast when you got back from Scandinavia for Nordic Series.
Yes, and I think maybe Alaska as well, when we're just starting it up.
Oh, man, yeah. That's the missing link. I was like, I feel like you've been on twice, and I just couldn't place it. But yeah, it's the Alaska Series. Mm-hmm. And so for you two guys, though, this is all new.
All new, yeah. I've never done it before.
Well, you're off to a good start. We had a little bit of, you know, the mic stuff to go over, and you guys are sounding good. And I suspect that while this is the first time on the podcast, it most certainly won't be the last.
I suspect that as well.
I as well. Yep.
So the reason we have you guys on the podcast, all three of you, is to talk about your experiences recently in Africa. So we're getting ready to launch the Apex series, that's season 6, Africa. You guys were on this expedition as a group of brothers with your mom and dad, the Expedition Overland team. Huge undertaking. I think you were out there for like 2 months.
Yep.
Yeah, 64 days.
64 days.
Yep. Yeah. Just a little bit over.
Okay. Well, see, this gets like to the first question maybe that pops into my mind. It's like, for everyone listening, imagine your family, right? Going with your kids, your spouse, and just going on vacation, like somewhere where it's a trip, it's pleasant. And maybe it's a week long. Maybe if you're really going for a long time, it's 10 days. And then you're home. Mm-hmm. Now, Eli, you just said 64 days.
Yeah.
All three of you with your family and the Expedition Overland team in Africa.
In trucks.
Yeah. Constantly moving. Always.
So what is this? What does that look like for you guys?
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was interesting when we got over there, just, you know, you're always, when you're home, you're in your own bed and everything, and you're used to normal day life. And then all of a sudden you just are in Africa. You got to flip the switch. Like, it's go time. And it's interesting. Just, like, me and Ryder bunked in Sequoia. Eli slept in the back seat of the Tundra. So,
the back seat.
Yeah, it was pretty much just wedged between two doors. So,
well, you could fit in there, so you're probably okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an adventure for sure. It was the longest all three of us have ever been away from home. Like, Alaska, I was gone for 4 weeks. Europe, 2 months as well. But I think we ended that one at like 59 days. So Africa just topped it by a few days.
So Cyrus, you are speaking, like, I think back to the first time I talked to you after Alaska, and you brought that to my attention. And it's like, you're speaking like an experienced expedition member now.
Thanks.
Yeah. Don't you guys feel that? Like, the way it's just like, yeah, well, you know, you go from home to just being launched into it. I mean, you remind me of talking to your dad.
Yeah.
But for you two guys, right, this is, I know you two were both on the Croft Solo series. People listening, if you haven't seen it, I'd totally say check it out, especially if you're getting out there camping as a family. That was an awesome series for that. But this is international overlanding in less developed countries, you know, a whole different continent. So that part of this is a first.
Yeah.
All right. So Ryder, you first. What was that like?
Well, so the way I viewed it, I knew it was going to be, I was going to step into an uncomfortable experience, because when you're home, you got everything you need. But once you get out there, you're just constantly moving and working, and you're probably missing people at home, especially for that long period of time. But it was also an amazing experience because it's like a whole different country, new things, new culture, new people. So I'd say it's a new experience for sure.
Yeah, man. From the United States and basically North American stuff straight to Southern Africa, South Africa. I think you guys did Zimbabwe and
Botswana and Namibia.
Botswana and Namibia. Okay, yeah. So not Zimbabwe.
No, didn't make it there.
All right, so three countries, South Africa, Botswana, and Namibia.
Yep.
Okay. A lot different from Bozeman, Montana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Canada.
Didn't see snow for a while.
Yeah.
So, Ryder, we'll get back around so you can explain in even more detail, but just as we're like laying things out here. Cyrus, you have something you're trying to say?
No.
Okay. Eli.
Yes.
So, did this meet your expectations, like going with not just your family, but the Expedition Overland team, right? I mean, you got your brothers, mom and dad, but then you have like Torfi and Dr. John and like, you know, Richard and Ashley Giordano. So you go like, mm-hmm. You are on expedition. Was it what you expected or not?
100% yes, is what I was expecting. It was definitely an experience I will always remember.
Oh, I believe that. Yeah. So give me one reason for starters why you will always remember this.
It's just one of the times where our family is just really bonded and all being together, pretty much trapped or not trapped with each other for like 64 days is a lot.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
I bet, man. That's so. And just for clarification for everybody listening, you're how old, Eli?
I'm 13.
And you were 13 on the expedition or no?
13 on the expedition, yes.
Okay. Ryder, you are?
I am 15.
Okay. And you were 15 on the expedition. And then Cyrus?
I turned 18 on the expedition. Yeah.
What was that like, man? Coming of age, like becoming a legal adult in Africa.
Yeah. It was a little weird because when you come of age in 18, you are actually an adult because you're able to purchase things like in Africa that you can't in the United States when you're 18. Like here, you gotta wait till like you're 21 to buy, like,
alcohol, yeah, firearm, handguns.
Yeah, exactly. There, it's you're an adult, like yeah.
So you could drink and anything like that.
Yep. Yeah, for my 18th birthday, me and my dad celebrated. We had like my first drink with him and stuff. It was super cool to have that experience in Africa.
I think that's so cool, you know, that you're traveling abroad where laws differ and you know, and that's one of the like advantages of travel. If you're of that mind, like with your kid and you turn 18, it's like, you know, you could have your first drink together in this exotic part of the world, mm-hmm. you know, and you're a legal adult there. You're not breaking any laws.
Yep.
Yeah. That's so different.
Yeah. It was an awesome night. I'll always remember it. We had like elephants walking in the distance in camp, and it was kind of scary because you just hear them moving, but you didn't know where they were. It was awesome.
Yeah. Your dad was on the podcast not long ago with your mom, and I was asking them about the animals, and he's just like, yeah, things could go really wrong really quick.
Yeah.
When it comes to animals. Yeah. So that was a question I had on this list, which honestly I had this list of questions because I was like, God, I got, you know, all three Croft boys on here and this is gonna be intense and I may even lose track of things. And
So
animals then. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear some animal stories. Were you guys like you afraid at all of the Africa animals? Did any instill any fear? Or like you were just mentioning the elephants.
Mm-hmm.
Elephants were very intimidating for sure. Cause they have, I mean, it's its own wild animal and they're twice the size of our trucks. Mm-hmm. And like you hear all these stories about the locals telling elephants pushing trucks over and stuff. Like we're nothing compared to them. So you just got to avoid them and stay out of their path.
You know, that's something too. It's like so hard, I think, for a lot of listeners maybe to get their head around, guys, is like, you know, we live in Montana. We got some big animals here. We got elk, we got moose, we got grizzly bears, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we don't have animals that will literally walk up and flip your pickup upside down.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And every animal there is either poisonous, wants to hurt you, or will hurt you. Like here, it's pretty rare to see a bear here, but there's just wild animals everywhere. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
And you guys are out camping and all that. Go, Ryder. You got something on your tongue.
I'd say the most intimidating animal was probably a hippo, because I've heard many stories about you can't get away from them. And I remember one night we were all camping and we just got back from seeing a leopard, and this hippo was 50 feet away from our campsite. And then it
50 feet. Just that close.
Yeah.
Just like, out of the water, walking around.
It was in the water.
It was in the water.
Okay.
And then I think it just started
making hippo noises.
Yeah. Yeah. We all thought it was coming after us. Mm-hmm. So everyone was kind of just running around for a second, and then we all knew kind of it was fine.
And you don't, like, that's the kind of scary thing I would imagine is, you don't really have anywhere to go when you have a rooftop tent.
No.
That's your, you know, run to the rooftop tent or get in the truck. But you got animals that can literally flip the truck over or charge it. I mean,
right?
So there's really like almost kind of like Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is like Jurassic Park out there, actually. Yeah, especially when you're just in the wild for roughly 50 days we were. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, was there, okay, so like elephant sounds like for Cy. Riders mentioned the hippos. What about for you, Eli, animal-wise?
Both. Like, we all had this time where it was just like us three boys and then Peter Van Straelen. We were all in the car riding back from the leopard site. And out of nowhere, there's just massive hippo in the road. And that just scared me so bad. And then we had another time where, like, we had this older elephant, like, kind of do, like, a fake charge. And that,
when you were in the vehicles?
Yeah. We were on this, like, tower watching over this, what would you call them?
It was, like,
water hole.
Yeah, it was, like, a watering hole. There was a herd of elephants that came in.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so it really, like, congregates them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely get a lot of respect for them. You just got to have it.
Yeah, man. And I feel like, you know, because of how you were traveling, vehicles, camping, rooftop tents, all that kind of thing, you know, you have even more respect for the animals of Africa. It's not like, you know, you go out on safari and then come back to this like super secure lodge.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
lots of people make it seem like that. And then when you're out there, it's not like that.
So was there a period like of adjustment where like, you guys eventually just kind of got into a rhythm and understanding the animals and their behavior and how you camped? And
yeah, for sure. But even like probably 3 weeks in of just mainly when we hit Botswana, there's elephants and hippos everywhere. And you kind of just gave them their own room and let them be, and they'll let you be. But some of the animals are also really cool, because like one time we went on we were in Botswana. It was like our first few nights in Botswana. We went stayed at this cool like lodge, and we did a safari that night, and there was like a couple wild ostriches there, and they came up to the vehicle and we could like pet it and stuff. It was cool, but it was wild. So
there, it wasn't like you're some game farm type of thing. Like, these are literally like wild ostrich.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's wild.
Yeah, it was cool.
Did you guys hear any lions roar? Or geez, like you mentioned seeing some kind of a cat when you went out at night. What was that? A leopard or a?
Yeah, leopard. Or definitely another big scary animal.
Yeah, and Eli, you know, I mean, I'm just looking at the three boys. You're the youngest and the smallest, so, you know, everything's even that much bigger, right? Yeah.
Well, also, like every night, we'd randomly shine our surefire lights into the dark, and all you could see is glowing eyes.
Yeah.
So you're just like, well, we're not alone.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in Africa, you would shine your light and you would just see a bunch of eyes all over the ground. Then you go up to them, they're just huge spiders. So you could see the spider eyes in the reflection. So there's like tons everywhere all the time.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So surprisingly, the only animal we never ended up seeing or hearing was a lion.
Yeah.
But you were in lion country, I know, right? It's just kind of incidental that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We never, in South Africa, we were going to try to make it to a place where they like had lions in the area, but we never made it that far. We ran out of time.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, you know, I'm just like thinking of all the movies I've seen of Africa and documentaries and just thinking of lions, right? And it's like, you know, kind of wandering off from camp in the dark to maybe relieve oneself or something, and picturing like the roar of a lion. It's like,
ah. Ghost in the darkness.
Yeah, ghost in the darkness. One of my faves. Well, animals. I'm sure that was amazing. And, you know, we're talking about scary animals, but what about some beautiful animals? Like, did you guys see a giraffe or zebra or anything like really stood out to you that way?
Giraffes are really cool. They're they're actually pretty sweet. Those probably one of my second or third favorite animals I saw there. They're so tall, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's so tall.
And when they run with like we have two legs, but they like use like their back legs the same time as they use like their they run with their side legs together. I don't know how to say it, but they look funny when they run.
Yeah, at the beginning of the trip, like, it was on my bucket list to see a giraffe, and when I saw it, it was just one of the coolest things ever. And it's like, really funny when they, like, go to drink water. They'll, like, have to, like, pretty much do the splits with their front legs to be able to, like, reach their neck into the water.
And speaking, wondering about that, Eli, like, when they go to drink water, what about the crocs?
We did see probably a lot of crocs, didn't we? And they were pretty much dinosaurs. They look crazy.
Yeah, crocodile. I forgot we actually did see some of those. We went on like a boat tour and they would just be laying on the bank, and they're so scary to see.
Yeah,
just huge too.
Yeah,
right?
Insane.
Yeah, as someone who spends a lot of time on the water and rivers and stuff, I think of those I think they're Nile crocodiles, and man,
yeah
they are freaky looking. Just knowing I can sit there and just kill you is crazy.
Yeah, like, you know, if you're out for a swim or something like that.
Moving back to, did we feel a rhythm towards the animals?
Yeah
we all kind of got a head start when Christoph when we were held back from the trucks, he just gave us a whole gist of not to drive at night and what to look at. So maybe 2 weeks after that, I feel like I felt a rhythm towards everything I've seen, even if I haven't seen it. So
that's pretty awesome. I think that's one of the benefits of what you all did, as opposed to a quote vacation end quote, right? Or it's a week or 10 day thing.
Yeah.
You're out there for 64 days, Eli? Okay.
Yep.
So that gives you time, I would think, especially doing what you're doing, overlanding, you know, so you're camping and you're in remote areas, to just kind of get in the rhythm of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely gave us time. And we even had more time to get used to it in the beginning, because like we were supposed to get our trucks right away, but we ended up having to stay at an Airbnb for like 10 days before we were able to get our trucks. It was a whole thing. So we just like explored Johannesburg and went around town and talked to a bunch of locos. Christoph came and gave us a scoop on what to expect at certain places.
So I might have like this training camp for a couple of weeks, just in one place, like warning you of all the things in Africa you were getting ready to go see.
Yeah.
Prepared.
We felt like we were ready to go the second the trucks came and that we knew everything, but we didn't.
Well, speaking of the trucks, I'm curious, you know, we were talking about USAI turning 18 while you're in Africa, right? And what that was like. Ryder, you're 15 and you have a learner's permit, correct?
Right.
So I saw a little bit of footage here and there helping out with some things. You were driving in Africa.
Correct.
So not many 15-year-olds work on their learner's permit hours on back roads in Africa.
No.
What was that like, man?
Well, I definitely knew I was never going to forget it, because I know nobody that has ever done that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also a good feeling, because I also knew that Montana is way different for driving, especially when you're in a desert equivalent to the mountains. It was definitely just beautiful.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Your dad is like there coaching you a little bit, right? Like, you can go faster or get the line or that sort of thing.
Yeah, I never really knew a lot of places here to learn. Mm-hmm. Like, because I feel like a good way to start is with a big old track. And like your dad coaching you. So that was perfect.
Were you guys off-road some, like in any kind of technical situations?
Yeah, it was all off-road for me. Like sometimes I stopped for an elephant one time. That was awesome.
Got for the elephant, son.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
He got to do a bit of off-roading, especially when we did Van Sales Pass. It was one of the hardest trails in Africa to do, and it was pretty challenging.
Yeah. What's it called again? Si?
Van Sales.
Okay.
It's spelled funny. It's like V-A-N Siles, but it's Sales is how they call it there.
And did you get to do some driving
on
this expedition too?
I actually ended up towing the trailer in the Sequoia quite a bit.
Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's an added challenge.
Yeah.
You towing, that was the fuel trailer?
Yep. Definitely a very important asset.
Yeah, for sure. You don't want to go knocking that over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then also an elephant charges you, you have to back up a trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly.
It was next level skills.
Yeah. I'm glad I got to tow it and get comfortable because I don't really tow trailers much here around town unless like small chores to do or... But there, I was driving with it almost every day, so I got really good practice with it, and just a good thing to know how to do.
Yeah, the only reason I really did off-road driving was I didn't want to get used to the left lane because Africa's left and here is right. So when I come home, it's not confusing.
Yeah, that'd be a big adjustment, especially for a learner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and off-road, you know, I mean, a lot of those just dirt roads through the backcountry, right? Like through the bushveld, just so you're still going like 30-40 miles per hour on some of those, or
sometimes it'd be way like 60.
Okay, yeah, so people understand it's not just two tracks and that sort of thing. It was just like these dirt roads and remote areas. I remember seeing footage something like that. I was impressed, man. It looks like you kept your nerve.
Nice.
And Eli, so you're riding along and all this, where do they put you, you know, with all these rigs and people, and these guys are driving some? Where were you in all this?
I was mainly kind of just everywhere, but my main car, like my home car, was Sequoia, and then sometimes I would also be in Tundra, but Sequoia was my main car in the back seat. So
So Sequoia, so Si's driving, you're in the back seat. What of the three, let's say you were of driving age, which vehicle would you have preferred to drive?
Sequoia.
Why?
The twin turbo.
And that it's a hybrid too, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's just like super powerful.
Sequoia is like a Ferrari.
Yeah.
Especially one day we had to leave the trailer behind because we got to go, it was somewhere along the Skeleton Coast.
Red Dunes.
But we got to go drive in the sand dunes and we had to unhook the trailer for it, but that thing is so fast. It's crazy.
Oh man, in the sand, I bet the thing just rips.
Yeah. It has the same engine as the Tundra, but it has that hybrid powertrain and it's just so much faster. It just has instant torque. And the Tundra is a lot heavier too with all the alley cab setup and everything.
Yeah. And remind me what vehicles were all there. I know Sequoia. What else?
Tundra and then Tacoma, Raven and
Okay. Yeah. So Gen 3 Tundra Orion and then Tacoma. The Tacoma was Raven.
Yeah.
Okay.
Raven, Orion, Simba.
Simba.
Yeah.
Right. Simba. That's the Sequoia's name.
We still just called it Sequoia most of the time though. Yeah.
That's fun. So I'm wondering, okay, man, there's so many fun things to talk to you guys about. And I've been able to, you know, pick your brains a little bit as far as challenges go and what you did, right? Mm-hmm. And I want to start with Eli when I'm asking you guys this question, like what were your specific roles on the expedition? Because as I understand it, your parents, like something that was really important to them was that this wasn't just a vacation and here boys come along. It was like, no, you're a team member. Mm-hmm. You have jobs, you need to do them. Right. So what were you doing, Eli?
So my jobs on the Africa expedition were, I was like dish boy. I would dry the dishes and then I would also get all the GoPros and then I'd get the radio SD cards.
And would you like recharge and format or what was your job with that tech?
So after I would get the GoPros and the SD cards, I'd hand them to Richard for Richard to offload.
Okay. Yeah. So that's like one of those little things that would be so easy to, you know, if it's somebody trying to do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact that like that is your role, that means it's going to get done, especially knowing you the way I know you guys, like you guys get a job, you're going to do it.
Yeah. And I would also just be always getting trash out of cars and like detailing them once camp was set up. So, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So you're keeping things clean too.
Mm-hmm.
That's no easy feat. Cause the footage I have seen,
It was like the, I think I told your dad, I'm like, I think we should make the dust like a metaphor in this series.
Yeah, it's very dusty.
Yeah.
So good job, man. That couldn't have been easy.
Yeah. Our rags would just be destroyed. It's insane.
So Ryder, what was your role? What were you doing?
My roles on the expedition were drone and batteries, like making sure the charge for the drones and really sometimes radios or tablets, just anything that needs to be charged. Then I was in charge of unloading bags and putting them to where everyone sleeps, just so it's easier for everyone. I helped mom out with kitchen, made fires. Those were all hobbies, but the main jobs were batteries and carrying bags.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, like it's kind of like Eli's situation, like the tech on a trip like yours is so important because you're filming a TV series. So like all that stuff has to be reset every night, offloaded, recharged,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You can't miss it. You can't miss that stuff. Or Richard's going to be like, well, my battery is in charge, you know, and everything comes to a halt. But you also helped your mom a little bit in the galley.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's your feet in an army. You mm-hmm. know, you got a whole expedition team and everyone's hungry as heck, I imagine, come nightfall. So what kind of meals were you guys cooking for the team in a place like Africa?
So a lot of times we did braai, so it'd always be meat. So we mostly have chicken wings, like chicken drumsticks. Sometimes
local chicken? Like you guys are just finding like local chicken from villages and stuff?
Grocery stores and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We made some tacos a couple times.
Any desserts?
Yeah, no,
we wouldn't make stuff, but we'd have stuff that we
like ice cream bars or something.
Yeah, cool things we would find.
Yeah, little treats to just kind of brighten morale.
Yeah, lots of little things to brighten morale. Mm-hmm. And we'd have like spaghetti, like lettuce wraps. And we always had something new every night usually.
Mm-hmm.
Mac and cheese. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fun.
Well, somebody, you know, you mentioned we were having a chit chat before this, Ryder, and you're talking about culinary class and being excited about that. You can bring some of the overlanded culinary world to your teacher, maybe, and be like, let's do some braai.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
So, Cyrus, what were your roles on this expedition? It's your third expedition. So,
My main roles, simple as enough, was driving. And I had. My other role, which kind of fell off, was editing. Because last trip we would edit, me, Peter, and Dan would edit while on the trip.
Mm-hmm.
But this trip it didn't really work out so well because we were swapping programs over. And so that kind of fell off. And then I kind of turned to, I by the end of the trip, I was more of a cameraman kind of. I would fly the drones. I was drone crew too. So I'd get the drone out, the Inspire, ready to fly it, which was our main drone. So it was Ryder help with that too.
Yeah, just prepping it, just getting it set up ready to fly, which I imagine with all the dust and conditions and everything, it had to have been difficult to keep that thing going.
It was gnarly, yeah. I think we only went through a few blades. We didn't wreck one this time, so that was good.
Right.
Yeah.
We actually did have to swap the drone out because it got so like corroded with dust and everything. Mm. We had to and the gimbal mount system on it just failed. It wouldn't connect, so we had to swap it out.
Different drone, like for a backup drone.
We took the gimbal mounting system off the other drone and put it on the new our current drone.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I hear you saying like driving was your number one role.
Yeah.
But then throughout the trip, you evolved into doing some of this like videography prep and a little bit of film stuff.
Yeah, sometimes we'd have both drones in the air, the Mavic and the Inspire. So I'd be flying the Mavic, which I loved. It was super fun. Mm-hmm. And then I did some navigation too, but that was mostly Ashley.
Okay, yeah, Ashley Giordano was lead navigator. But you did do a little bit. Was she coaching you some and you were kind of learning how to do it?
I would just kind of pick up on it, and sometimes me and Peter were drive buddies. We'd ride, and we took over Raven a lot because it had no AC, and so we'd swap it out, but me and him would kind of just suffer through it because we just liked being together. But sometimes we'd end up the lead truck, so we had to figure out how to navigate.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Yeah, you and Peter.
Mm-hmm.
This is an ad, but it's a good ad. The ad is to announce that we've linked up with the Mobile One team, who have joined us in celebration of their 50th anniversary. And what better way to celebrate a 50th anniversary than supporting five content creators to each produce five films on ExOverland Network? The Mobile One brand has a simple mission: to encourage the love of driving. So, over the course of this year, you're going to see some of your favorite overlanding content creators doing what they love out on the unpaved roads of America in the ExOverland Network creator series, driven by Mobile One. Because we're driving, and it's all about the love of driving, well, you get it. The first episodes in this series are called Gone Cookin', produced by content creators Gone Dirtin', and will be available exclusively on the Mobile One YouTube channel, so go subscribe and hit the bell so you're in the loop. You won't want to miss the other four series and exclusive bonus behind-the-scenes content as well. This is a long ad, but 50th anniversaries call for big news. So join us on the long road ahead as we celebrate the love of driving in honor of the 50th anniversary of the Mobile One brand, out on the open road.
So that leads me to another question for you guys. So you're out there beyond your family. You're out there with the whole team.
Yeah.
And some really interesting people. Who are your favorite members of the team and why? Like, whether these were like fixers who showed up for a while, or these were like staples on the team, like a Dr. John, like who outside your immediate family was like, oh man, I love having this person on the team and this is why? Like, who did you connect with?
For me, my favorite person, well, I can't have a favorite person. I love them all equally, but the one I guess I connected to with the most would be Peter, because he's only a couple of years older than me, and I mean, we can relate to a lot of the same things.
Mm-hmm. Guys are peers.
Yeah, and we spend a lot of the time in the same car together. But I also love Dr. John. He's just a great guy. Torvi is awesome. Just learning about, I mean, he's from Iceland, so he's awesome.
Is that his first time in Africa?
Yeah, yeah.
And so what, man, from Iceland to Africa?
Yeah, it was a big culture change for him, for sure. It was really nice having Torvi on the trip, just knowing someone can work on the trucks better than us, I guess.
Yeah.
And he just, like, we had to tear down, when we were trying to fix Raven's AC, he would just tear down the whole front end of Raven in camp, no problem, and put it all back together. He knew what was wrong with air compressors. He's just a genius.
He's like a Dr. John of vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. Him and Richard, because Richard had a mechanic career for a little while, too. Them together and my dad was just a good squad.
That's awesome. And I can totally see you and Peter connecting.
Yeah.
And Peter, like, to speak to Peter for a moment, like the little bits of footage and pictures I've seen of him, dude, the man looks like a wild man from an African movie. Like, he's just hair and the hat and just dust everywhere. Yeah. You know, it looks like he was just full sending on what he was doing.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Another thing I connect with Peter the most is it was my third trip with him, because my first trip was with him and Dan in Alaska. They came and then Nordic Series for 2 months as well, and then Africa.
Love that.
Yeah,
forgetting the history you guys have.
Yeah.
All right, so Ryder, who is the person? I mean, maybe size, right? Maybe we shouldn't say favorite, right? Mm-hmm. Although maybe you have a favorite. You're like, actually, this guy.
No. the whole team was excellent.
Yeah.
That's one note. I'd also have to agree with Peter and Dr. John. Torby is awesome too.
Yeah. Is there someone you connect with more than others? Like, do you just spent more time with or found yourself like just enjoying bonding with some?
I say Peter. He was also, I'm not too far from Cyrus's age, so I'm also not too far from Peter's age. We just had a lot of stuff related, and he was just a fun guy to hang out with. And
Dan wasn't on this trip, correct?
No.
Okay. Dan was there at their island. Mm-hmm. Do another epic family road trip things with their family.
That's cool. Yeah. I saw some stuff with Dan on a motorcycle recently. Yeah. He's back on his dirt bike doing some crazy thing. I was like, all right, cool. Eli, what about it, man?
I'd say I have a few people that I mainly connected with. I'd say mainly Torfi and Dr. John, because their two cars was also Sequoia with me in the back. So we would always just be like talking and chatting or just listening to a book or something. And then I would also usually help Dr. John or Torfi with car stuff. So I'd always usually be with them. So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, you know, if you're working on a vehicle, just to have someone like you to be like, hold this.
put pressure here. Do yeah, this, exactly. You know, right? Yeah, that makes sense. And you are technically, just for clarification here, the youngest member of the expedition.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, that's quite a role. Mm-hmm. I don't know who the oldest member was. Maybe Dr. John.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, you know, I'm wondering, you know, as far as the human side of things go, right? Like we talked about the animals and we talked a little bit about place and driving mm-hmm. and your jobs. On the human side of things, did you guys come to see, especially you two, because you haven't been on an expedition like this one before.
Yeah.
Did you come to see your parents in a little bit different light? Like, did you come to understand them a little better or in new ways?
I'd say I have, because especially like just seeing my dad become more than just a dad. He went more into like a team leader, more mm-hmm. just leading people around. And then with my mom, I think about like the same. So, yeah.
Yeah, so you got to see them in their roles. Like we just talked about your roles, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your dad's like expedition leader and director. So you're like seeing him do that as well as be a dad still to you guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
The way my dad's just able to chart out an episode and mm-hmm. see what the film needs and is crazy. I don't know how he does it in his head. And the way my mom's able to keep all the meals together and just be able to stay a mom as well is also awesome.
So what kind of a rider, or how about you?
Well, I always saw my parents as really hard workers, but when I was little and they say, here's grandma for a month, we'll be gone. It's a vacation to me. But then once I was out there, I saw how hard they work and all their roles and how my dad leads, my mom cooks, and still learning how to talk with us. And just keeping the team up and running, I saw them as hard workers, harder workers.
Yeah, that's wild, man, because what I hear you say in there, too, is like when you were younger and they would go on these expeditions and you would go to your grandparents, there was kind of this sense of like they're going on vacation.
Yeah.
And you're kind of envious, like, oh, they're going to this cool place. And then you got to go and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is a ton of work.
Yeah.
Fun.
When we were young, we had no idea what it entailed.
And now you guys, like, the lights are turned on there. And you're part of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Pretty awesome.
When I was younger, I would just beg my parents to take me with them on the trips. And now, like, now that I've been on one, I just, like, it gets a lot more real than just vacation or just, like, going to there to have fun. It's just a lot more than that.
Yeah, it's like an actual life experience. It's like a part of your life you're living in. It's not a trip. It's not a vacation.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not a break.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So that's, I guess, you know, gets me thinking as far as the future goes, guys. And, you know, you've lined out your roles on this trip. You know, what you see your parents doing, what's going on with the whole expedition. So, you know, thinking of the future, I know you guys will be on more expeditions. What would you like to do most at this point? Like, you know, fast forward a while, like if you could have that kind of agency to pick what you want to do, like what would you most like to do down the road?
It's a good question.
I always thought a cameraman would be fun. You know, there's a lot of work to do with it, but if I feel like if I really learn how to operate it and shoot it, and then once it's all edited and I look back at it, I just feel like it'd be awesome feeling, because then you're one, you're really a part of it, and you're also a character on the show. Yeah. Flying drones would be cool too for filming.
I could see you flying drones. I could see that. And you really like just helped me even understand, Ryder, what it's like to be a cameraman.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, like why you'd want to do that is helping me understand why. Like I heard that Peter, for example, really came into his own. Mm-hmm. As a camera operator and just loved it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're describing like to actually be the person behind the camera and trying to get this radical footage. Mm-hmm. And then when you play that back and you're like, I got that.
Yeah.
Like the satisfaction of that.
I always saw Peter like hanging off of cars and climbing on cliffs. So once you just look at it, it's like, whoa.
You're like, I'd like to do that.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's awesome. I could totally see the desire in that. Cyrus?
It's kind of a tricky question because I like the flying drones aspect and everything of that, but like 15, 20 years ago, my parents' job didn't even exist. So, I mean, there might be a job like role in this company that might not even exist yet that I might fall into. But being a cameraman for sure would be, is on the list. Learning how to edit is, I've done a little bit of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably going to start up again pretty soon here. That's just a good skill to know. And, but I don't know, driving, I know how to drive. I always love doing that. I love driving trucks, and it, as more trucks come out and everything, it's going to be cool to experience those and be on trips with those trucks. And yeah.
Yeah. You know, and people like say, oh, well, you know, the driving, that's the easy part or something. I know. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
If I were on that expedition, especially like at 51 years old, I'd be so happy to have an 18-year-old doing a lot of the driving.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you. Especially, you know, when things get tough. Like, I know you guys didn't want to, but you had to drive at night more than once.
Yeah.
You know, just to have those young eyes and reflexes. And
there were some long days in there, 6, 8, 10 hour days of just no one wanted to drive, but you just had to. And especially when you're just going over bumps the whole time, and especially in Raven with no AC. Richard and Ashley suffered a lot too in that truck too.
What about you, Eli? Where do you see yourself? What would be your kind of your dream role in the expedition?
Well, when I was in Africa, I really fell into what Richard's job is. Well, he has a few jobs, but like photography. I got really into that, and I started doing that a lot. So I have thought about like going back into it, and like my school is photography classes and stuff, so I'm going to take those. And then just learning how to like edit the photos, I want to learn how to do.
Oh, cool. So like lead photographer.
Yeah.
Photography is cool. I like doing that too as well.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very calming.
Yeah, I can see why, you know, especially in the chaos of the expedition to like just get behind that camera and just get into a different space, and you're doing something really artistic too, you know, trying to capture an image.
Yeah. Just, I would like Richard, what and who can I take pictures of? He'd always say just like team members and like, sponsors. So I'd
you did get to take a few pictures.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I took a lot actually.
Yeah. He was always running around with the camera taking pictures.
I bet his point of view was unique because just because of your size and, you know, being a younger person, like you're just going to see things that other people wouldn't see. And so you're going to get some cool stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this kind of ties together to another question I have. You guys, let's say you're in charge, the three of you. It's going to be the three brothers on expedition somewhere. And this might get kind of fun. The debate might come live here on this recording. Where would you guys go and why? What would that look like?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would like to go back to Europe a lot. Probably Iceland, honestly. It'd be cool to do all three of us there, because I was the only one of us brothers that got to do it. And they hear all of us talk about it and how awesome it was.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to get those two there. And I've kind of experienced it, so I would know what to expect, and I could kind of lead them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that'd be a pretty cool place to go on a little trip.
Man, I like that idea. I can see your parents listening to this recording like,
Yeah.
Might spark that. I'm trying to help you guys out here a little bit, right, with these questions. Like, yeah, I think we'd like to go to Iceland.
Yeah.
Clay and Michelle, are you listening? So what about you guys?
I would also like to go to Iceland. I have heard so many stories there.
You love to fish too, don't you, Ryder? That's something you and I have in common.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's a place where you could bring the fishing rods.
Yeah, fishing is a big part there.
Yeah. Yeah, Mom always talks about how good the food is. I saw the Nord series. It's so beautiful. There's just so much history and culture there as well. Everyone just seems so polite and nice. Like Africa, everyone was awesome. And yeah, I just like to be part of that journey, like how Cyrus and everyone else went to. Because when they came home, I was like, ah, oh, man, that would be so cool.
Oh, man. And there's so much to explore in Iceland. Yeah. Like, you know, there's so much more to go back to, right? Cy, like,
yeah, for sure. Like, yeah. Especially the inner circle of Iceland.
Yeah.
Not just the outside ring.
So it's cool because you guys could, like, go back with, like, a mission to see places you didn't on the first expedition and uncover some of that stuff.
Yeah, we didn't even get to the whole western fjords or anything, because I wanted to go see like the cool puffin birds, but
Yeah.
We just didn't have enough time.
Well, man, I love that idea. Eli, are you down for this or do you have a different idea?
I have two, but I would, I'd just love to go to Iceland. It's always been a dream of mine. And then my other option, it would be really cool to go to Saudi Arabia. Mm. See all, like, I heard, like, every single house is, like, a crazy sports car or something like that. And it'd just be cool to see, like, the city and just, like, drive around, see all the wildlife.
Yeah. So, Saudi. Yeah. Saudi Arabia. I just watched the Dakar. I'm a big fan of the Dakar. So if you're down with Saudi, you should check out that race, man. It's all in Saudi Arabia now.
I don't know how much wildlife is in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, in Africa, Richard.
Maybe in Riyadh, there might be some wildlife. But might be a little, you're not quite old enough for that kind of wildlife.
Yeah, Richard and Ashley, they like showed me a video in Africa of like somebody's car just covered in monkeys and stuff.
And Saudi or in?
Saudi, yeah, Arabia.
So there is some wildlife when you get off the beaten path in there.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Before the African trip started, they just got back from their trip from Saudi Arabia for like a month or.
Yeah, that's right. They were there touring around and did some filming, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I love this idea, guys. Like, as the three brothers, like, going on your own expedition at some point. And the places you mentioned to me are, like, they're realistic. It's like, you know, Saudi is developed enough country. Like, that's a place you guys could probably do safely. Same with Iceland.
Yeah.
Like, it could be the start of something. So
yep. Yeah.
I'd be down for that. So, well, you know, I think we're getting close to wrapping some things up here, but so I guess let's just jump to this, like, final thoughts on your African experience and, maybe some of your greatest challenges. Let's address that question as part of this. Like, what did you see as the biggest challenges personally, and how did you overcome those challenges?
For me, I had a lot of challenges on that trip. Not much necessarily like being homesick. Like towards the end, I got kind of a little homesick, but not as much as I did on the Europe trip.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest challenge was probably just like finding more of who I was and like where I want to continue with my life, you know, like after high school and just, I don't know. It's just such a broad thing to think about. And I don't know. I just felt like on the trip, I knew I was working hard, but myself, I feel like I wasn't, because I wasn't the youngest guy on the trip, I guess, is what I came to a conclusion to. I don't know. I talked to my dad a lot about it on the trip and just trying to figure out who I was, because on the Europe trip, I was the youngest guy, and I was really trying hard to keep up with everyone, especially Dan and Peter. And this trip, I feel like I was working hard as well, but didn't have like that strive to be better than Dan and Peter or like, I don't know. It was just a weird.
Yeah. Almost like you were there, obviously part of the expedition doing your thing, but you weren't quite sure where you fit in maybe. And
yeah,
you're kind of thinking, well, where do I fit into the big picture? Like, you know, at 18 in my life and
that's
what I'm going to do.
Yeah. That was it.
Well, it's that stage, you know, you're coming of age. Si, like just turned 18, graduating from high school. So big future ahead, man, and big things to figure out. It's cool that you had that kind of space on an expedition like this to ponder that a little bit.
Yeah.
Ryder, what was your biggest challenge? I mean, for you two guys too, it's your first time on one of these big expeditions. So
I'd say I had a few challenges. I was also never really necessarily homesick, definitely towards the end. But I remember one time I was sitting and the sun was setting and it was just vast. And then I was looking on my phone and I saw everyone at home just having fun and enjoying the summer. I was like, man, I wish I could be there. Mm-hmm. And then I put my phone down and looked up and I was like, but I'm here. And no one else gets to do this. So I just shaped up right away. I was also trying to improve myself quite a bit. In the beginning, I wasn't doing that good. I felt like I was just like kind of just there. But then I had a chat with my dad and he was like, you just have to be in the full experience. So right after that, I shaped up and I was just trying to better myself anywhere I could. And had a lot more fun. So
it kind of went through your own journey. It sounds like having a transition. And what do you think you learned, like life lesson wise from that?
I think I learned to understand that it's always really good to improve and not really
like to be in the present, like to be engaged, yeah, like to just be all in.
I'd say to be in the moment and engage with people. I was never really social, so I kind of learned if I'm going to be with my team, be with them. Yeah.
Props to that, man. I can relate to that one. You know, you better be there with them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to when you're on a team, when you're in a team and you're on something like that.
Yeah.
Now, good for you, man. That's a huge life lesson to learn. Eli, I heard something about you were preparing ahead of time. Your dad was saying on the podcast.
Yeah, I was mainly, yeah, just trying to prepare ahead of time for just like trying not to be as homesick as much during the trip. And I definitely feel like I did a lot better when I was on the, or from then, than from the solo series. Cause I was like, after like only 27 days, our last day in the solo series, I was just ready to go home. But it took me a lot longer to like start to be homesick in Africa. I was like probably 2 weeks before our trip ended, I was really starting to feel it, and it's kicking in. So I'd say overcoming that, and I guess how I overcame it is kind of just like, oh, I guess I'll get to be like at home with everybody, with all my friends in only 2 weeks. So I just gotta keep pushing and get through it and just keep doing my roles and stuff. So that's what I did.
Yeah, so it's like you learned how to cope with being homesick and just being in this whole different environment in a healthy way, like how to cope with that in a healthy way and get through it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's impressive. It's awesome to learn those lessons, and it just speaks to how this was not a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. This is an experience.
Yeah, for sure.
Always doing something.
Was that a way that you cope too, just like getting to work on things and kind of getting your mind off of things?
Yeah, it's definitely nice when you have like jobs and other like little chores, and then also your little hobbies that you get used to just doing. So that's definitely a nice thing.
Love it. So last question, and then I promise we're going to wrap it up. Okay, Ryder, favorite thing about the trip?
My favorite thing was my first time really out of the country. Oh, man. My mom was always talking about, especially now we're home now, like the people and the food. And like as I was coming home, I started to realize how much I just love the culture in Africa. So I'd say one part is the culture, like how they cook, how they act, just what they do. And I learned a lot from tribes, like how they get their water and how they hunt. And yeah, I'd also say the scenery, unbelievable. I've always wanted to see a few animals up there, like elephants. I didn't want to see one in the zoo. I really wanted to see wildlife things. Like, I did want to see a lion, but it was okay that I didn't. I was very happy to see a leopard. That was part of one of my favorite things. But yeah, Africa.
Say no more, man. But you said it well. I love it. Cyrus?
This is a good question. My favorite part of the trip was towards the very end of the trip. Like the last 2 weeks of just, well, we came down from the Skeleton Coast, which was a pretty awesome place, just being by the ocean again. I love the ocean. And then we separated from there for about a week, and we went to the coast of South Africa, the West Coast. And that was probably my favorite ever. There was like all these wildflowers everywhere, and we were able to just have, the temperature was nice in Raven. We were able to just have the windows down, and me and Peter would just be looking out. We got to see a bunch of cool seals. And then another place, I oddly enough, was the, when we got to Cape Town, that place was so cool. It was like a movie there. There was like these huge cliffs with like houses on the cliffs, and the ocean surrounded it, and the great white sharks in the bay and everything, just knowing that they're there is, I mean, the place is just so cool. And that people surfing down there, like I've never really seen that before. And it was just awesome. And it was so vibrant and green, and it was just really cool.
Cape Town, that's South Africa.
Yeah. Yep. It's the Western, like almost west, the west,
southernest, yeah.
Almost the southernest western point.
Okay. You're reminding me something too, Si, that we've chatted about, like how much you love the ocean and the water. And
yeah.
And so like that part of this trip, it's no surprise to me that that was really standing out to you.
Yep. Another high was in South Africa at the very last few days of the trip. We got to go to the most southern point of Africa, which was really cool.
And you guys drove to that point?
Yep.
Oh, cool.
It was awesome. It was after we were by the ocean in Cape Town that we motored there, and it was kind of like the last stop before. And just that feeling of wrapping everything up and ending up at the most southern point was so cool.
Man, that won't be my last question because of what you just said. Eli, favorite thing?
I definitely have a few favorites. So my all-time favorite is just a big, huge, huge, huge bucket list was the Skeleton Coast, just seeing all the shipwrecks. And I just thought that was just like amazing. One of the coolest things ever. And then one of my second favorite things was like, it was like a certain time we were coming out of like this camp spot. And it was just, we were surrounded by mist. There's mist everywhere. This is in Namibia. And all of a sudden, we just came out of this mist, and there's just a big wall of mist everywhere around you, and there's just mountains in the middle. That was probably one of my coolest moments. And then I'd have to agree with Cyrus being with Cape Town, and then driving down to the most southernest point of Africa was another of my favorite.
Yeah, man. So like just the awesome landscapes and kind of like natural settings that you were in.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what got me thinking, just I got to do one more question here, is what Si was saying about like getting to the end of the trip, you know, and just like that feeling of closure must have been profound for you guys. And then what I'm thinking is, you know, you got on the plane, you got back here to the States. In that first week of coming from the likes of Namibia and Botswana, right? What was it? What were some of the biggest shocks to you culturally? You know, getting off that plane in your first week back in the States.
My biggest thing was driving on the other side of the road again.
Oh, yeah. Being a driver.
Yeah. Like one of the first times I pulled out of the driveway, I drove on the wrong side of the road. Then I got back over. I was like, oh yeah.
See the truck coming. Whoa.
Yeah. And another one, like all the kind of like a weird one. All the chemicals in the food you can taste in America.
Oh yeah.
You can taste, yeah. Like you can taste those. You come back.
You get so used to it here, like all the junk food and everything. And then you go to Africa and everything just tastes so fresh and good. Cause they don't, yeah, they have bland. Actually like higher standards than us. I'd feel like,
wow. So it's not as processed probably. Uh-huh. It's just fresh. Mm-hmm. The fact that you could taste that, you're like, whoa.
Yeah. Like interesting facts.
Fascinating.
At least in Southern Africa where we were, that general area, to drink, if you were to have a Red Bull in the United States, you'd have to drink 2 Red Bulls to get the same amount of caffeine and sugar down there. Like there's just a lot less sugar, less like caffeine compared to soft drinks in general, candy. Yeah,
and you're coming from the world of teenager land, Si, right? I'm thinking like Belgrade High School, you know, when everyone's snacking on and eating and stuff. You're just like, whoa. So the food just shockingly different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My first week back in the States, I remember, so the very next day was my first day of high school.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The very next day.
Yeah, we didn't have a chance to get used to the time.
We went right back to school.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but I remember English class, you used to teach English.
Yeah, I did.
But I just sat there, and I was just so antsy, and I just wanted to get out and move, because I spent a while since I really sat down for a while.
Yeah.
And, like, when I got home, it was awesome to see all my friends and our new house and all that. But, yeah, I just wanted to get up and move, and I told my dad that same day, I was like, when's the next trip? So
yeah, man, like I just, like, as a former teacher, like guy like you would be in my class, and it's like, why do we have people sitting in desks all day?
Yeah.
Like with the energy that teenagers have. So like coming back from what you just came back from, and then it's like, you know, sit in a classroom.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was just like, whoa, wait a minute.
Also, the people were like a little angrier. Like there were
people here, you mean?
Yeah, people here.
Yeah.
It was just a little more depressing. Just everyone's not really as happy as African people, because here we have everything we need, but in Africa, they don't really have a lot, but they're still really happy, and we're kind of just a little sad. But a good thing to come home to was it's always different here, too. It's not just sun and desert like in Africa. There's snow, water, mountains, all that. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love it, Ryder. It's like fun just to picture that, yeah. You know.
I say I would notice most is like how everything's so organized and you like, or you also like actually get the language.
Oh, here yeah. In the States, like just, okay.
Yeah, but in like Africa, it's just, everything's everywhere all at once, doing all sorts of different things. So, but here it's like more like put together and like just better flowing, I would say.
You mean like our society and just yeah. just how things are run and traffic uh-huh. or stores or whatever, kind of just more organized that way?
Yeah.
Well, guys, this has been a delight. Just a really fun way to spend an hour having a conversation with the three of you. And I feel like I've gotten to know you a little better and certainly gotten to know a lot more about your experience. And I really hope we get to do this again sometime and you're telling me about future adventures.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think this will be the last one.
No.
Yeah, I hope not. I'm excited for the next trip.
Me too. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody, on the X-Overland podcast. And hope you got a little insight into the world of the Croft Boys in Africa and all their amazing experiences. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for joining us. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. It really helps. We appreciate your support. And until next time, stay adventurous.